Hi. I wanted to spend some time dealing with the trump cards, or the major arcana of the tarot deck, and I'm also going to mention the menorah, which is the Jewish candelabra, because these both tie in a way, to the Messiah cord. I'm not going to be spelling out what the cord is. I'm going to save that for when the book is published, if it ever gets published. I can't find anyone who wants to publish it now. But I'm going to save that for the book. But I'm going to talk around the cord as much as I can, and if you can figure it out from there, good for you. But I'm going to give you a lot of clues, and this is important anyway. So let's start out with the menorah. In the Old Testament, you have... by the way, I left Christianity. I don't believe the Bible is the Word of God anymore. So why am I quoting from it? I started out using these analogies of the Messiah because I was studying the Bible for years. So I just used these analogies, and this is before I left Christianity. So rather than go back and rewrite everything in the book, I just left it the way it is and used these same. See, the menorah is not... It's something that is taken from somewhere else. And it's given a Jewish name, but it's not Jewish. So there's truth in some things. There's hidden meanings. They're valuable, but they're not Jewish in origin. I want to make this clear. This is true with a lot of things. Even what's called the Hebrew alphabet. It's not Hebrew. It's Phoenician. Go look on the internet. Find the Phoenician characters and look at the early Jewish characters and tell me they're the same thing. There's variations of the Hebrew alphabet. If you go back to the original Hebrew, it's so much different than what you see today. This is another argument, but a lot of this is just parasited from and called Jewish, but it's not Jewish. So there is some things of value in the Old Testament, but it's not because it's Jewish. It's just because they got them from somewhere else and put them in the Bible. But anyway, understand that. The menorah is, in a lot of ways, parallels the trumps, okay? There's 22 almond blossoms on the menorah. You'll find three branches of six blossoms. And then on the vertical stem, there are four. Notice it's six times three, so 666. In evangelical Christianity, and I used to be an evangelical Christian myself years ago before I left Christianity, 666 is given a bad name, but it's nothing bad about six. The verse in Revelation, his number is, it says it is the number of a man. His number is 666. That's not what the Greek says. There's no letter a in the Greek. It does not say it's a number of a man. It just says it's a number of man. The Greek word for man there is anthropos. Strong's number 444. It simply means mankind, you and me. So nothing bad in the least about it. So, anyway, it's a number of man. Actually, six is the number of man. That's another discussion. But so we have 666, three branches with six on them, okay? That's going horizontally. But vertically, you can look at the menorah and say, well, there's nine on each side because 333. Because you have those six on each branches, but they're divided by the stem. Now, there's almond blossoms on the stem, but they're on the stem. They're not on the branches. So, you have 666, which is 18, 1 plus 8 is 9, or you have 9 on each side. The significance of looking at the 9 on each side is that you have a polarity. As we were taught with conventional mathematics in school, that if you have positive 1, you have negative 1. If you have positive 2, you have negative 2, and so on. And so, this shows you that it's a polarity. And a polarity only functions in the material realm, because the material realm is governed by the number 2, which is typified by a hydrogen atom, which contains one proton and one electron, but no neutron. The spiritual realm, however, is governed by 3, which is the deuterium atom, which consists of one proton, one electron, and one neutron. So immediately, when you see a polarity of nine numbers, that tells you it's dealing with the material realm. And so you have polarity here. But the three in the middle, there's four in the middle. I'm gonna deal with this more. But The very top almond blossom is synonymous with a zero or fool card in the major arcana. Okay? So you have three. But that three, or if you want to call it four, either way, it's not a polarity. So it's part of the spiritual realm, not the material realm. So the nine numbers are part of the material realm in another way, because in the material realm, there's no... nine, it can be used in the sense of chronology, but it can also be used as an illustration when there is no chronology. For example, I get into the concept of in the heart of God. There's in ancient Egypt, you had Amun, and then you had the hidden part of God. You had two. So the need is the need for God to exist. God to exist, God must know all and be all in all, as we were taught in Sunday school, in church, omniscient, omnipresent, and so on. In order to be that, God has to have all knowledge. In order to have all knowledge, you have to have all experience. So who is the God that experiences things? It's you and me. We do the experiencing. We are God collectively as man. So the easy illustration here of 1, 2, 3 is not in a chronology. Okay, you have God, you have the need to acquire the knowledge, you have the need for experience, and that need. I came up with these terms because I didn't know what to call them, so I call it the need. Then the other one is called the idea. And the other one, then, is called the knowledge. Okay? And so there's three. The knowledge, and ultimately, is God. I mean, we're back to the beginning again, right? The 1, 2, 3. The 1 + 2 = 3, you see. Can't separate them. So, you know, you look at 1, 2, 3 and you say, well, these are chronological. I'm only using them in a chronological sense so you can have an idea, so you can grasp the concept, but there's no time and eternity. This is not like in this world, you know, you're born, you age, you get old, you die. That's chronological. But this is from our point of view, from the eternal point of view, this time process doesn't exist. It's vertical, not horizontal. So the three, the idea of three is just one process. So getting back to the nine, you have a polarity, nine numbers of polarity, -1, +1, -2, +3, etc., up to nine. They don't exist in the material realm. The 1, 2, 3 actually is a chronology that does not exist. It's a process that has three aspects to it, but it's a vertical process. It means it happens simultaneously, not horizontally or at different periods of time, chronologically. So I argue that there are not nine numbers that exist. There are not even, I'm talking in the spiritual realm, there are not nine numbers that exist. There are not even three numbers that exist. There are, this is one argument. I mean, you could argue that nine exists, you can argue that three exists. There's only three numbers, there's only one number. You can make arguments either one of these, okay? I'm simply pointing out here the arguments. You can also argue that one exists because that three, as I told you, that governs the spiritual realm, that's a process. But it's a simultaneous process that doesn't happen over time. Therefore, it's one process. So you could say it's a one number that exists and not three. One number with three aspects. But you also then have to consider the argument that even one does not exist. Because if you're going to argue that one exists, what is the point of reference for that one? It's a 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. If that one exists, all the other numbers must exist. Others, there's no criteria to define what one is. Okay? So you could argue that even no numbers exist in the spiritual realm. So, interesting. So, in getting back to on the stem here, the four, which would be the 22nd one, which is in a way it's parallel to the chasm in my Messiah course. Not the same thing because there's differences, but in at least in the sense that it doesn't fit into anything else and it's independent and it's not a part of anything. Because you have the first three on the stem, the bottom three, 1, 2, 3. That's the three, the process. No four parts of the process. And just like in music, where the final minor third of the diminished seventh minor chord is eliminated, and when a woman is pregnant for 1 year, those final 3 months after the baby is born, the remaining 3 months of the year, those aren't counted, you see? And also in the key signatures, I'll get more on this later, but the key signatures of the final three, I mentioned about the no sharps, no flats for the key of C sharp A minor, and then 1, 2, 3, 4 sharps, and then 1, 2, 3, 4 flats, which gives you there's nine key signatures there, and there's nine keys. Actually, there's 10 keys because each of those key signatures is for a relative major and relative minor, right? But let's not even say there's relative major and relative minor. Let's just include them both in the one in the key signature. Because in music, when you tell a friend of yours, we're playing this in four sharps, you don't say E major or C sharp minor. You just say four sharps. That's how musicians communicate with each other. Okay, it's how it's used. So there are exceptions to that, of course. So there's nine key signatures and there's nine keys. Okay, there's the four sharps, four flats. Those are keys, and then the no sharps, no flats, which is so there's a nine. And then, but you have the final three. Which are seven sharps and five flats, which are enharmonically the same key. Then you have six sharps and six flats, which again is the same key. Then you have the seven flats and five sharps, which is enharmonically the same key. But remember, similarly to the three on the stem and the three cards remaining in the major arcana, which I'm going to get to soon, they're eliminated, so to speak. Not that you throw them in the garbage, any more than a woman after she gives birth after 9 months can get rid of those final three events. You don't get rid of them because you're still living them out. They're still there. They're still on the calendar. But you're not observing them. They're not just a part of anything. They just quietly and respectfully sort of fall to the wayside. That's the best way of saying it. So those final three key signatures. See, there, you can divide this into two parts. The first nine. And this parallels the Enneagram by Marco Rodin. If you look at the Enneagram on the website, you have four on each side. He numbers have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, which I don't. There's a difference. I have 1, 2, 3, 4 on one side and 1, 2, 3, 4 on the other side, which is also the case not only with these key signatures, but also in the circular diagram, which has a completely different context, which had to do with the symmetry when you're starting from either the D or the G sharp and A flat using symmetry, because you can only count four on each side by default. It can only be four and four. And then I had the nine in the middle. Okay? It can't be any other way. And so, similarly, with these key signatures, there's the final three that... See, these final three are not a polarity. They appear to be a polarity, but in reality, it's the same key. They're not a polarity in the sense that... how can I say this? There's no reason to have two different key signatures, but those two different key signatures do add up to 12, and that's interesting because 5 and 7 is 12. But 12 is not a number. Remember that. That's why you must eliminate the last three, because there's only nine numbers. 10 is not a number. 11 is not a number. 12 is not a number. That's why you must eliminate the last three, because partly because there's no use for them, and partly because that's the only way you can get back to nine. There's only nine numbers. There's not 12. And so, spiritually speaking, there's not 12 keys. There's only nine. This is why the diminished seventh minor chord, the final one-third, has to be eliminated. This third that's eliminated, so to speak, is what I call the red zone. It's the distance between the relative major and relative minor. So, for example, in the key of one flat, which is F major or D minor, the distance, the red zone, would be between the D and the F, okay? It's always eliminated. It's called the red zone. It's the fourth part. It's you have something with four parts, you eliminate the fourth part, and you're left with three parts, as we have in the diminished seventh minor chord. It's always, the fourth is always eliminated. This is the principle. It's found over and over and over again. So getting back to the menorah, you have six horizontals, 666, or you have the polarity of nine. That's nine on both sides. But the middle three are not polarities, and the top one is always eliminated. 2 plus 1, you have 21 almond blossoms. 2 plus 1 is 3. But if you had 22, then 2 plus 2 is 4. Now you got a problem. So let's go take a look at the menorah. Look at the major arcana now. I'm using the Rider-Waite deck. It's the most popular deck. Manly Hall also produced a deck called the Knapp Hall deck. Knapp was the man who did the graphics on it. And there are some differences, and the major differences is that actually Rider-Waite does a substitution of two other cards as well on his deck. But the major difference across the board, regardless of which deck you're using, regardless of
this is the ongoing major problem is the zero card, or what's called the fool card. If you go back in history with the tarot cards, there's no such thing as a standard tarot deck. There never was. The earliest decks had a variety of different numbers in the deck. Okay? And some had numbers, no Hebrew letters, no names on them. Some had names, but no Hebrew letters, no numbers on them, and all different variations. And even the drawings were different. And so the deck that we have now is considered standard just by convention, we'll say. So the big issue here is the zero card, or the fool card. And in the significance of this is that this parallels in some ways my chasm, not entirely, but it parallels it in certain ways. So I'm going to read to you four paragraphs from the book by Manly Hall, The Secret Teachings of All Ages. And I just had this here. Let me go back here. Four paragraphs. Let me just find this chapter again. Okay. Let me read this for you, please, here. Most writers on the tarot, Mr. Waite, a notable exception, have proceeded upon the hypothesis that the 22 major trumps represent the letters of the Hebrew alphabet. This supposition is based upon nothing more substantial than the coincidence that both consist of 22 parts. That Postel, Saint-Martin, and Levi all wrote books divided into sections corresponding to the major tarots is an interesting sidelight on the subject. The major trump cards portray incidents from the Book of Revelations, and the Apocalypse of St. John is also divided into 22 chapters. Assuming the Kabbalah to hold the solution to the tarot riddle, seekers have often ignored other possible lines of research. The task, however, of discovering the proper relationship sustained by the tarot trumps to the letters of the Hebrew alphabet, the paths of wisdom thus far have not met with any great measure of success. And the paths of wisdom The major trumps of the tarot and the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet cannot be synchronized without first fixing the correct place of the unnumbered or zero card, le mat, that's French, or in English, the fool. Levi places this card between the 20th and 21st tarots, assigning it the Hebrew letter Shin. The same order is followed by Pappus, Christian, and Waite. The last, however, declaring this arrangement to be incorrect, Westcott makes the zero card the 22nd of the major trumps. On the other hand, both Court de Gabalon and Paul Case place the unnumbered card before the numbered card of the major trumps. For if the natural order of numbers, according to either the Pythagorean or Kabbalistic system, be adhered to, the zero card must naturally precede the number one. Here's a second paragraph. This does not dispose of the problem, however, for efforts to assign a Hebrew letter to each tarot trump in sequence produce an effect far from convincing. Mr. Waite, who re-edited the tarot, expresses himself thus: I am not to be included among those who are satisfied that there is a valid correspondence between the Hebrew letters and the tarot trump symbols. The real explanation may be that the major tarots no longer are the same in the same sequence as when they formed the leaves of Hermes' sacred book for the Egyptians, or even their Arabian successors could have purposely confused the cards so that their secrets might be better preserved. Mr. Case has developed a system which, while superior to most, depends largely upon two debatable points, namely, the accuracy of Mr. Waite's revised tarot and the justification for assigning the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet to the unnumbered or zero card, since Aleph, the first Hebrew letter, has the numerical value of 1, its assignment to the zero card is equivalent to the statement that 0 is equal to the letter Aleph and therefore synonymous with the number 1. Third paragraph. With rare insight, Court de Gabalon assigned the zero card to Ein Sof, the unknowable first cause. As the central panel of the Bembin tablet represents the creative power surrounded by seven triads of manifesting divinities, so may the zero card represent that eternal power of which the 21 surrounding or manifesting aspects are but limited expressions. If the 21 major trumps be considered as forming as limited forms existing in the abstract substance of the zero card, it then becomes their common denominator. Which letter, then, of the Hebrew alphabet is the original of all the remaining letters? The answer is apparent, Yod. In the presence of so many speculations, one more may not offend. The zero card, Lemat, the fool, has been likened to the material universe because the mortal sphere is the world of unreality. The lower universe, like the mortal body of man, is but a garment, a motley costume, well likened to cap and bells. Beneath the garment of the fool is the divine substance, however, of which the jester is but a shadow. This world is a Mardi Gras, whatever that is, a pageantry of divine sparks masked in the garb of fools. Was not this zero card, the fool, placed in the tarot deck to deceive all who could not perceive the veil of illusion? Here's the final paragraph. The tarot cards were entrusted by the illumined hierophants of the mysteries into the keeping of the foolish and the ignorant, thus becoming a plaything, in many instances even instruments of vice. Man's evil habits, therefore, actually became unconscious perpetrators of his philosophical precepts. We must admire the wisdom of the initiates, writes Pappus, who utilizes vice and made it produce more beneficial results than virtue. Does not this act of ancient priests itself afford proof that the entire mystery of the tarot is wrapped up in the symbolism of its zero card? If knowledge was thus entrusted to fools, should it not be sought for in this card? So here's interesting, where he mentions that is not all of the knowledge contained in this one card, this seemingly empty card. This is exactly is the situation with the chasm that I discovered, is that everything revolves around the chasm. The seemingly nothingness is everything. And so this is why this is absolutely vital, the study of the tarot cards, because it's so insightful. The 22, the 21, and the various configurations of the tarot cards. So I'm going to put these up on the internet, and I'm going to do Manly Hall's put his cards and compare them with the weight cards, so you can see the difference between them. So it's all about numbers, and I don't pay any attention to these images on the cards because the images had varied, and there's nothing wrong with the images. Interestingly, what's numbered 15 on the Rider-Waite deck, I think in all of them, 15 is the devil card. And if you add 1 plus 5, you get 6. So is that just a coincidence? We have no idea if these pictures there's no evidence that they went back to ancient Egypt, because it wasn't the nature of the Egyptians to use pictures. They used hieroglyphs, okay? That was their focus. They did have imagery, but you'd have to prove this. I'm not saying it didn't. It couldn't have. It could have, yes. But there's no evidence linking this to the Egyptians. You don't see Egyptian symbolism in all these cards. There's problems with this. But there's nothing wrong with the images, and they can be fun. You can just let your imagination go and have some good, clean fun with this. They're relaxing, the therapeutic, but don't put any value in them as far as any spiritual truth. I mean, any imagery can be good. You know, you can use your imagination, and it's fun. But not to read anything into that. The emphasis here is on the numbers. You can cover up the pictures. You can just use 22 blank cards with nothing on them. It's all in the numbers. And it's understanding how numbers are used and how numbers convey spiritual truth. So don't focus on letters on them. Don't focus on the titles on them. Don't focus even on the numbers of the existing card. You can just get 22 blank pieces of paper, 22 blank cards, and just write 0 through 21 on them if you want to. And you'd serve the same purpose, because the whole emphasis on this is entirely in the numbers, okay?